It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90 Red Eye, redeyeradioshow.com. We stream live, get our app, put it on your phone. Listen anytime. Just reading some of Ricky Gervais's tweets about the Oscars.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear all of your inspirational speeches about equality. And it's great that the 3 hours you're here tonight is the only time your badly paid migrant house staff will get some time off to sleep this week. Whoa, man.
Oh, man. He's been, you know, the thing is it's, for him, I mean, he's been consistent. He just has that roasting style humor that really works. I mean, if you could get him to host every awards show, you might get the viewership back up. I have no idea what it was last night, but when he hosted Golden Globes, I don't even remember looking. I think they did well, but. Of course, the talk was all about him and not the awards. You know, he's been pretty funny.
What was it? I was reading you the headline on FoxNews.com that was just hilarious.
About Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah. Where is it here? Here it is. Oscars turn philosophical.
Uh-huh.
Joker star's acceptance speech touches on his life, the state of the world. The treatment of cows.
Yeah. That's just insane.
Man, I'm telling you, it just...
You know, we basically, his complaint is about artificial insemination for cows and then taking their babies.
And their milk.
And their milk. And you can hear the mother cow. You can tell that she's distraught by it. I'm paraphrasing here, and I just thought to myself, well, yeah, but think of how sad I will be if I don't get veal.
I doubt you're going to find much sympathy there.
I will from other veal lovers.
Yes, other veal lovers. I'm talking about the Hollywood audience.
Veal matters.
Yes. It's
it'd be funny if they served veal at the Oscar party, at the post party. Oh, man, please, somebody tell me they did.
Not even that. Nice big glasses of milk.
And milk. Veal and milk. Wow. All right, that's fine. You want to be a vegan? Fine. Don't preach to me. I like red meat. And I cannot lie. Yeah, I never have gotten the whole awards thing. My thought is this: your award is that big old check you get.
All right, I want to play this audio cut here as we talk about the Iowa caucuses, and the final result and all that, and New Hampshire coming up. And this is on MSNBC Saturday evening. James Carville out there, along with presidential candidate Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, who is polling 0 to 1% right now at the moment on the current state of the Democratic Party. And they started talking about, Bennett was saying, well, Trump won the debate on climate change, and there's no way he should have. It's ridiculous. We can't let him win that argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked, James what he thought about it. And he just went back to the point of, look, he only got 46% of the vote. And that's where we start from this point here.
Yeah. So let's just don't go overboard here. He got 44.8% in 2018. He suffered the worst electoral defeat in the House ever. It was the highest turnout against him since women were granted the right to vote. His polling average is, 43.2%. But yet the media is going, oh, he's so strong. He's so powerful. He's so this. No, he's not. What the problem here is the Democratic Party. And the problem is we can't seem, other than Senator Bennett and maybe Senator Klobuchar, who can't seem, and may have Pete somewhat for sure, to talk about things that are relevant, that matter in people's lives. We're out there chasing every kind of goofy thing that we can. And I just think, and I've never been proud of anything I've done, and come up here and try to help Senator Bennett, and I'm up here, and I love him, I think he's a great guy. I love the United States, and we got to do something here.
Do you think you have a firm grip on who the Democratic Party is if you consider all the energy behind Senator Sanders and the kind of campaign he's running versus yours? James?
Go ahead, James.
I have the idea of the Democratic Party that I read about and I see on television, and that is a bunch of people on Twitter running around causing trouble. The Democratic Party, I know, consists largely a lot of African-Americans. It consists of a lot of suburban women. It's a lot of Latinos and Asians and people of color. It's a lot of older retirees. To me, that's the Democratic Party. But to MSNBC, the Democratic Party is... Whoa. Manhattan is the epicenter of the Democratic Party.
I wasn't saying that at all. I was saying I don't think Bernie Sanders supporters are people living in high-rises in Manhattan.
But let me say this. Can I say this on the Democratic Party? We won the House of Representatives in 2018. We won. We flipped 40 seats. How did we flip 40 seats? 39 out of 40 Democrats ran on a public option. One ran on Medicare for All. That's how we put Trump on defense. Trump's the only president in American history who's taken insurance away from millions of Americans. We should be on offense. In 18, we were on offense and we won. In 20, we can't go into this election on defense. Correct. on health care.
Yeah. Sentiment, too, and I never tire pointing out. We won the governorship.
This is the Chevy.
Okay. He's they didn't accomplish much. What they're trying to say is we won in 2018. And as you and I were saying before the top of the hour, 2018 is gone.
You
ran in the majority of those 40 seats as moderates.
Mm-hmm.
You had in Pennsylvania, you had one candidate holding an AR-15.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the last election where the Democrats will ever be able to win by trying to pretend that they were moderate.
Right.
And then after that, everything changed.
Well, you know, everything
changed.
Think of what we've gone through since then, that midterm.
AOC jumped into it, and right. It was... her party early on.
Oh, yeah.
And the party has gone distinctively to the left. That's the problem. Carville did point out, yeah, that is their problem. The problem right now with Democrats is them. But here's the thing that I was thinking of the other day. You and I were looking at, and Scott Rasmussen had brought up that one of the things that they were looking into was in Iowa. There's roughly 200 and something counties across the country mm-hmm. that made the difference in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
They went Obama, Trump. And that's a key. And they were looking at the key here of those 30 something counties in Iowa that went Obama in 2008, Obama in 2012, and then Trump in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for a massive turnout of energy to show that, okay, they've had enough of Trump, they've rejected him, and they're ready to go back to the Democrat Party. That didn't happen. That's why they're worried. Why didn't it happen? And I was going to ask you this question in our pre-show meeting, I never did, just to test it out, but I was thinking to myself, and tell me if you're on the same level as I am, what has Trump done that would turn those Democrats or independents in those counties that made a difference in the last election, changed their minds towards the president?
And since the midterm?
No, since they voted for him in 2016.
Okay.
Because I'm talking strictly the ones.
The pivotal counties.
I'm talking the pivotal counties that went Obama, Trump. And that's what they were looking for.
Right.
That energy that these people had rejected Trump. And I thought to myself, well, why would they reject him?
Yeah, and 2016 was a totally different animal. I mean, Trump as a personality wasn't, but as a president, I think he's gained steam. So you can add even more to that pivotal. I would love to see what I haven't seen is those pivotal counties and what happened in the midterm.
Right, but I'm getting to the point of just specifically Trump, not the midterm involved in it, but an election that will be driven by the presidency.
Right.
And this is going to be driven by the presidency.
Right.
And that's what they were looking at. They weren't looking at the midterm. They were looking at Obama, Trump. They were looking at those elections and those counties. What would change a Democrat or somebody who's an independent who leans Democrat who voted for Trump in 2016? Why would they not vote for him in 2020? I can't think of a reason.
Oh,
because
no, yeah, there's right. No, it's even more so. And I think that gets back to my point. His momentum now is much greater than it was in 2016. And 2016 was pretty huge.
Why did they vote for him?
It's what we said. Trump's not the cause of all this. He's the result of all this. But then you take between 2016 and now, and it's far worse than it ever was. And I think in those pivotal counties, there are roughly 200 of those counties nationwide, but 31 of them in Iowa alone. The point is that this justifies them supporting him in 2016, and I think 2020 gives them even greater momentum.
Well, the specific reason that the Democrats or independents who lean Democrat voted for him was really one thing and one thing only: economy.
Sure. Yes.
He doesn't lose on that. Economy and jobs.
No.
He doesn't lose on that.
And in Iowa, you're a farm state, and if that's holding, if that support is massive from the farm
state,
I'm telling you, we don't say the word landslide, and we don't even make predictions, but you're setting up quite possibly a clear victory for the president where he gets over 50 nationwide.
And then Bennett starts talking about the fact, and Carville didn't hit it as much, but Bennett started talking about, we can't lose to Trump. Trump was able to say, if we do all these things for climate change, we'll lose jobs. He can't win that one. We can convince them, basically, that if we do all these things for climate change, we can produce new green jobs.
No.
You've been trying to sell that for years. You can't sell that. And Ocasio-Cortez, where were you, Mr. Bennett? Where was Carville slamming and saying the Democrat Party early on had to revolt against AOC? Where were you? These are people that they're lying to you. They're liberals, and they would put the most liberal agenda in if they thought they could sell it. What they're understanding now is they can't sell it, and now they're having buyer's remorse.
Well, and there's that, and I think, too, you look at, as you bring up the whole green jobs thing, look what the Obama administration did with those green jobs. It was, we're going to create these, and then they started counting jobs that were already there as green jobs. They weren't new green jobs. They were, okay, if you are a company that makes insulation, now you're a green job. Well, yeah, but no, that's not a new one. They were talking about creating, expanding the number of jobs. The problem is they spent all of their cards, every one of their tricks, all of their best jokes. They basically, during the Obama years, put their best moments of the movie in the trailer. And they, at the end of that 8 years, what did you have? You had a group of liberals saying, well, what did Obama do for us? Nothing.
Right.
Because he kept making the same promises. They're trying to rehash all these old promises and remake them again when they went nowhere years ago.
I'll tell you one thing. I was watching Carville's body language,
mm-hmm.
and just his explanations, where he never got into any type of specific details. He doesn't know where to go.
I don't think any
he
of
doesn't
them do.
Know. You could see the frustration. They don't know where to go. They let the far left take over the party, and they were fine with it,
mm-hmm.
as long as they thought that there was this momentum behind it. Now that they don't see the momentum behind it, now they're worried and claiming that they're moderates.
Yep.
Oh, we got to talk about what the people are concerned about. Where were you fighting AOC from the very beginning?
I think at this point, President Trump could strangle a baby cow to death and still win.
In front of
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And while drinking a glass of milk.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Since oil is like the blood of your engine, the benefits of oil analysis go beyond preventative maintenance. If you're considering buying a new car, vehicle, motorcycle, or even diesel machinery, an oil analysis can help identify any issues lurking under that washed and waxed hood. You might want to reconsider your purchase if a lab report shows high levels of metal in the oil. For fleet managers, oil analysis can help minimize downtime, as well as safely extend drain intervals, meaning less money spent on oil, filters, and labor. Like a blood test, oil analysis shouldn't be a one-and-done item on your maintenance checklist. Although a single sample is useful in providing a snapshot evaluation, especially where a component problem is suspected, used oil analysis is best used when results can be compared to many samples taken over a period of time. Cenex recommends that diesel engines be analyzed monthly or every 250 hours, and gasoline engines every 3,000 miles. For more information, visit cenex.com.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Rich in Connecticut about Giuliani claiming he has the goods on Hunter Biden. Rich, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I think it's very disheartening to hear Matt Gaetz disclose on TV that he didn't think the Hunter Biden scandal will go anywhere because too many other politicians are engaged in the same thing. This could be very well why the investigation is being slow-walked. I hear lots of talk, but no action. To me, this at this point, Bill Barr isn't any more effective as Jeff Sessions.
Well, wait a minute.
I'd be very disappointed.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Hold it. Tell me what law enforcement agency has received all the documents that Joe Biden has.
Well, I don't know.
Then you can't make that state. That statement is a political statement by Gaetz then.
If you've got
the evidence and you're not bringing it before the people that can do something about it, and I mean all the evidence, and if you don't trust Barr, because look, Barr came out apparently, this is what Lindsey Graham says, and says, bring it all to us, we'll verify whether it's true or not. We want to check the documents out. He's just waving stuff around. If you got the goods, you can either go to Barr, you can find any other prosecutor, or you go to the media, you go to think tanks, you go to former prosecutors who would go through the evidence with you and bring forth and go on every single media outlet and say the goods are there, we've got all these documents, you can make the case. If you've got the goods.
That's right. I agree.
Okay, if you've got
the... Right, I agree with that.
Okay.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, no, because, look, he came out yesterday and said that Joe Biden's the one that gave and took the bribe. Well, that's a pretty damn serious accusation. You claim you've got the evidence for it. That shouldn't be hard for prosecutors to figure out.
Yeah, because right now Giuliani, of course, has no prosecutorial power. That's going to be up to the Department of Justice. Right now the play is on Giuliani. It's in his hands. He's got to take those documents before the DOJ can even talk about it. I mean, they may have a process set up to receive those documents, but they're not going to be able to do anything with them until Giuliani moves on it.
Right. And the longer he does this, the more he hurts the president.
Right.
Because the country's been through this before. But from the other side, accusation, 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 no proof.
Right.
The last thing I want is, because of what Giuliani is doing, is in the process of what Barr is investigating, to hurt the credibility of the other side that is attempting to find the true criminal activity that has existed out there.
Right. Yeah.
That simple.
Giuliani's move here. And by the way, AG Barr not being better than Jeff Sessions. John Durham. We've already got a federal prosecutor on the whole Russian collusion thing.
Yeah.
So
right. There
is work being done.
Page 2, Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know what kind of attorneys I like?
Yeah.
Even though they do not fulfill the exact same role for the president.
Right.
I like the president's White House attorneys.
Yeah.
Never hear from them at all. Never hear from them at all.
Yeah.
And when it's time to do the defense, it's absolutely slam dunk with all the evidence that you're going to need
right.
and all the great cross-examination that you want that blows the other side away.
Yeah, but, that's, you know, that's that's what you should be doing. Forget about, go get the proof. Wrap it up in a nice, neat little package and deliver it. And that's what you do. That's how it works. Boasting about it does nothing. Okay? If there were a leak from, let's say, the Washington Times that something is about to come down, you pay attention to that, great. But when you're boasting and you've been saying the same thing for a month.
Almost 2 months now.
Almost 2 months.
2 months now, yeah.
Yeah, since mid-December.
Yep.
And you're not delivering. And one time, this is what disturbed me, I think, the most. It was like the second or third time he claimed it. If we have to, we'll use it. Whoa. What do you mean if you have to? What do you mean if you have to?
And he said if, too, again.
Yeah.
He said this again in the interview the other day. He said, I want to prove what happened because I believe if we prove what happened, he will be totally vindicated. Well, you just said you got the evidence.
Right. So present it.
That you've said you've got the smoking gun, and you didn't say if or I believe Biden. You said Biden took and gave the bribe.
Right.
Joe Biden.
Right.
I don't like that kind of, those are things I pay attention to when an attorney says it.
Yes.
And when a former prosecutor says it. And at that point, I'm even saying, get your story straight. Is it if or is it you got him?
Right.
And then if you say you got him, if you say if, that's a totally different ballgame. But when you say, you know, he took the bribe, he gave the bribe and took the bribe, there was no if involved there. You've made the accusation. You better have the evidence. And if you have the evidence, now is the time after 2 months. Now that Lindsey Graham has, and since you addressed Lindsey Graham, and he came back and said, then there's a process for you to do it. I've talked to the Attorney General. There's a process. All the news agencies are talking about it. There's an opening for Giuliani to bring any evidence against the Bidens to the Department of Justice. It's there. It should be done this morning, correct?
That's it. I mean, it should have been done in December. Even if you didn't present it to the Department of Justice, if there were no process in place at that point, presenting it to the American people, filing a congressional or something so that you could move during that process in the impeachment. You know, we all knew that the president wasn't going to be removed. But the problem I have with Giuliani, again, is you're making a claim that you're not backing up. You're holding papers in your hand. I don't know what's in those papers. You've been making that claim for way too long. Lindsey Graham said it back in December. Well, if you've got it, you need to show it. Quit talking about it. You're not serving the president by doing this.
No.
And that's frustrating because what is the point? What is the point? You would be, okay, all right, at the very least, creating negative views against the Bidens by the president's base. That's already in place. That's already happening.
Yeah, and what I'm looking for is, you're the other side. The president, you're the other side. You're the president's personal lawyer.
Right.
The president has been pounded with lies, false allegations that he committed treason, that he was engaged in impeachable offenses. All of it's false.
Mm-hmm.
All of it's political. All of it has been lies all the way along. The prosecution was a complete sham. You don't need to do that.
No, you don't.
Don't do what they did. Show the American people we do not get involved in doing things like they do. That's what the president's White House attorneys did in a slam dunk against the prosecution there. Don't play their game. If you've got the evidence, bring it forward. Show the American people you deal with fact and the other side does not.
Right. Deliver.
There is no excuse to not deliver those goods today, whatever you have, to the Department of Justice or to start doing it. Now, a couple of the headlines said they are starting to review the beginning of it. I didn't say that in the story there. It just said that there is a process now that the Department of Justice has. Well, then you should, by this Friday, the Department of Justice should be telling us we've got all the information and we're looking to verify everything here.
Because if it turns out it's damaging, you know, if let's say today he were able to demonstrate that it's damaging, who knows? I mean, Biden might be in like fourth or fifth place in New Hampshire. Oh, wait.
No, I like that.
It's simply about the truth. It's simply about the truth.
Well, it's about two things. If you're the personal lawyer, you do want to completely and totally exonerate everything, all the allegations against your client is what you wish to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not ready, as we said early on, if you weren't ready to go, don't make the accusation.
Don't talk about it.
Don't talk about it. What you do is, and if you're not sure, because remember one of his other clients, let's view that his claims are legit. We tried to bring this before certain people, and the FBI agent, as he said on Sunday Morning Futures, went like, I don't want to hear it. Well, I don't know who that FBI agent was specifically. I don't know who you brought it to. But before you do that, if you're not sure, well, then you get the best former federal attorneys, and if the president's got to pay for them, I don't know. Whatever process you've got to do, you get former federal attorneys to review everything that you have and say this is one of the strongest cases for bribery we've ever seen.
Right.
And you get well-known former attorneys, federal attorneys outside yourself, prosecutors, to go through this with you and look at it all and verify it and legitimize it before you even go to the Department of Justice. You've got you've crossed all your T's, you've dotted all your I's, and you present this package, and then you go full bore in the media at that point.
Look, here's the thing about October surprises. Wait until October. Not the December before. I mean, if the idea is to help the president politically, great. Don't talk about it, release it. So we'll see what happens this week. I mean, because I think this is Lindsey Graham basically calling out Rudy for the last time, because he said it in December. If you've got something, you need to present it. Lindsey Graham to Giuliani.
And he also made the case, he didn't say he made a mistake, but he did, by saying bring it all to the Judiciary Committee. And then he said, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe we have the capability of understanding. If you bring all these documents from the Ukraine, we need somebody to verify them first. And the Department of Justice has to be able to do that first before we would look into it. I think
right.
That's probably a smart move. And as
yes.
you said, I'm not going to be the Republican Christopher Steele. I'm not going to be making allegations based on documents that I find out later on are fraudulent.
Right, exactly.
I'm not putting together my own dossier. We're not going to do the reverse. And that's part of what we're on. Let's not start how it all started, which was the allegation based on the dossier that was false. And boy, that was an official-looking document, wasn't it?
Sure. But that goes back to what I said earlier. The resources are all at the DOJ. Hand it to them. If there's something worth pursuing, they'll do it.
Not hard.
Yep.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And most incredible acceptance speech yesterday from the Oscars we have here. I mean, just the, well, I don't know what else to say. I mean, I'm almost brought to tears.
Yeah.
Because of the emotion of it.
Yeah.
From Joaquin Phoenix. Are you ready?
Here we go.
Okay.
We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow, and when she gives birth, we steal her baby. Even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. And then we take her milk that's intended for a calf, and we put it in our coffee and our cereal.
No. I gave up cereal. And I don't put milk in my coffee. I usually just pour it out and waste it. I buy gallons at a time just to pour it out in front of Joaquin Phoenix and watch him cry.
Oh. So then he doesn't go to the Indianapolis 500 then, does he?
No, I'm guessing not. Winner's circle.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not where you want to be if you're Joaquin Phoenix. Don't look, man. You and the cows, look away. Look away. Oh my goodness.
And,
really?
And of course, and the other thing is to Brad Pitt, who made up, you know, the thing about Bolton.
Right.
That he had 45 seconds or something. He said that's more time than the Republicans gave Bolton. It's more time than the Democrats gave Bolton. I still don't understand to this day why Democrats aren't angry at Democrats for never going after Bolton to begin with.
To Adam Schiff.
Right. Never got an answer to that. Why there's no anger at the Democrat side.
Pitt and Schiff. That sounds like a law firm, doesn't it?
Were the Pitts? No, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to. I could be in trouble there. I got to be very careful.
They're the hammer. You know, the it just gets more and more entertaining. You know, by the way, the award shows, and we don't watch them. We just play the stupid clips afterward because we don't have the time to watch stupid things for hours and hours. More entertaining than the movies they're winning for most often.
The last time I actually watched was when Jerry Maguire was up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the last time I watched.
And that was 96. That was the last time I watched.
I think Smokey and the Bandit was up for something the last time I... I wonder how many people in that room are looking around and going, is Joaquin okay? You think he's good? Is he okay?
What do you mean? Have you checked out the candidates for president that they think are sane?
By the way,
we're talking Hollywood.
Cereal? No, cereal's filled with sugar. What are you doing, man?
That's true. I didn't think about that.
How about thank you? Thank you, everyone, for this award.
I couldn't be in Hollywood. I would hate to go to the
awards. There's no way I could get through it. I just couldn't get through it. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you sit there in the audience and just listen to that, you know, for hours and hours and hours. Because it turns out to be, what, three and a half hours?
Yeah. You would think somebody would just stand up and say, you people are idiots, and walk out, just go,
Exactly. No, I couldn't do it. Not that I would ever deserve an award, but even if I did, I just couldn't sit through it. There's no way I could sit through
Eric,
that live.
Eric, you've won the award. I'm sending Gary to accept it for me.
Exactly.
But what are you doing that night? Sleeping.
I'm going to be eating cereal and milk with a side glass of milk. Hey, I heard milk does the body good.
All I know is James Woods said, I'm glad there were no politics. I really enjoyed it. It was entertaining. Like, what were you watching, James? Really? Now, I know the majority was not political. I know that. Okay, maybe that's what he was saying, that it wasn't overtly political.
All right.
But
that's fine.
It still was.
That's fine. But they have to see that in terms of the producers that put the award shows on. They've got to see that people tune out to them.
I mean, the one producer, Workers of the World Unite.
Yeah.
Let's just quote Marx now.
Exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90 Red Eye, redeyeradioshow.com, where we stream live. Or get our app, put it on your phone, and listen whenever you want. In the news this morning, well, it was the Oscars last night, so of course, there were political things said, for example, from Brad Pitt.
Thank you to the Academy for this honor of honors. They told me I only have 45 seconds up here, which is 45 seconds more than the Senate gave John Bolton this week.
And then there were just strange things said by Joaquin Phoenix.
Hmm. We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow, and when she gives birth, we steal her baby. Even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. And then we take her milk that's intended for her calf, and we put it in our coffee and our cereal.
Is he pro-life? Just wondering.
Yeah, good question.
Just asking that question.
Yeah, good question. Good question. That's Hollywood. Becoming more and more relevant by the second.
And so that's about all you missed.
That's about it.
They gave out some awards, but we really don't care.
Yeah.
I don't even know what won. Do you?
I don't know. Don't have any idea. I don't base my movie watching experience on that.
Best performance by an actor in a leading role, Phoenix, the Joker. So there you go.
Yep.
Best picture, Parasite.
Woohoo!
Best performance by an actor in a supporting role, Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that you turned off halfway through.
Yeah, too boring. Once a yawn a time in Hollywood. It's never about the awards. It's never about what everybody's, the word always comes out right usually toward the end of the year. Oscar worthy. There's Oscar buzz. All right. The critics all love it, and then I end up going, eh. Or the critics all hate it, and I'm like, wow, pretty good movie.
I don't watch any award shows. I mean, none.
I don't see the point. For me, it's like watching them get in line to get paid.
But I mean, no Hollywood, no music, no sports.
Yeah, no.
I don't watch any of them.
No. No.
I just don't care about awards.
No, it doesn't change my taste in movies.
No.
It doesn't change my attitude toward the individuals who pretend for a living, the actors.
But what about the glamour of the red carpet?
No. I would do tile. I wouldn't do carpet. See, to me, carpet's not glamorous at all. Carpet gets dirty. Yeah, you got to clean it all the time. You got to replace it. No, carpet's not glamorous. Not at all. And who has red carpet? Come on. Nobody has red carpet.
You know, it was on. I had to watch the last part of it because I always tear up at the end.
What's that?
Even though, I mean,
a Wendy's commercial?
No, Argo. Oh. Argo was on. Speaking of Hollywood, Argo.
Yeah.
And when they get out, when they're on the plane, and then they switch to the guys in Hollywood, John.
John Goodman.
John Goodman.
Yeah,
and the other, I can't think of the other actor's name. When they, you know, because they set up the fake Hollywood, Hollywood studio
to produce
that movie in order to get the hostages in Iran out.
Right, yes.
And when they're jumping up and down and cheering when they, you know, when they, we got them out, and they're screaming and jumping. Those are the kind of Hollywood people I like. And Goodman's role in there was like he really didn't care about awards and he thought everything in Hollywood was just pure BS. But both of them did.
Well,
those are the kind of guys in Hollywood I like.
I mean, it's all about the work, right? I mean, it should be in about everything. You go out and you make the effort, make the best you can. And then beyond that, the whatever the product is, music or any form of entertainment, your audience is just going to vary by taste. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it.
Alan Arkin.
Oh, my gosh.
He was just great. He was great in that. And Goodman was great in that. And even Bryan Cranston, I thought was great in it. All of them were.
That was a
very well done movie. Now they add a little bit of drama, which didn't need to be added,
right?
Or at the end, where they just got out in
the nick of time.
The planes going down the runway, right, and the cars are coming. Even see the cars start pulling over like they're going to block off this. Looking like a 747.
Yeah, didn't happen that way.
No, it never happened that way at all. I mean, that was just it was ridiculous. They got out. They got out pretty easy.
Yeah.
And it was I'm sure there was tension, but it was, you know, which I said, you don't need to add that.
No, you don't.
Didn't need to add any of it. You could have just gone through, just them sitting in the airport was, you could have done, sometimes if nothing happens, M. Night does.
Right.
Where nothing happens and it's a suspense alone that gets you.
Right.
There are no monsters. Nothing happens, but they could be there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you could have presented it the real way that it happened in Argo,
right?
And had that same tension if you do the movie right, just looking all around and people looking at you, because the soldiers were still there with the guns, and you're just sitting there. And that time that it's taking, sitting at that airport waiting to get out, and you're dead if they get you.
Well, that was my point. I think that was the most probably nerve wracking moment, suspenseful moment in that movie. And all you have to do is really depict it as it happened. You don't have to add anything to it.
But we were talking just to Hollywood and you know, the Goodman role and the Alan Arkin role.
Right.
They were just so cynical about Hollywood to begin with. It was like I was immediately drawn to those characters, and I thought it was interesting because I was thinking about that when I was. It was just on the last 10 minutes of it, and I got to watch it because to me that's still. You know, I remember when it happened, and it was so huge when they got the hostages out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the documentary on it, when I see, because it's coming, you know, the 40th anniversary is coming up of The Miracle on Ice, February 22nd, 1980.
Wow.
Yep, I know the date. I remember exactly where I was when that happened. And when they talked to some of the hostages, it's in the documentary about the game. Mm. And they talked to the hostages, and they said, you know, when we got out, one of the best things was they got to watch a tape of that game. And they said, you know, being in an oppressed society, you know, being in a society like that, and then coming back and just seeing people cheering at a hockey game and the patriotism of basically, you know, living in a free country. And that just was overwhelming for them. And I always get that when I watch that movie, when they get on the plane and then, you know, they announce in Swiss Air, okay, we are now out of Iranian airspace. We can serve liquor.
Mm.
Or I think they first said we can serve liquor because we're out of Iranian airspace.
Right.
And then they knew they were safe, and just the look in it. And I could imagine, you know, we talk about the left always will look at this country. There's not much different. That moment sets the difference right there. Those people knew the difference between an authoritarian society and a free society.
Yeah.
Even with what sucks in it every day and what we complain about every single day. You look at compared to what's going on, and we're looking right now about when you look at an example of that in China, where we don't even know how many people are dead and you can't trust the government on it because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Things that are just commonplace here that just don't happen are commonplace and standard operating procedure in many of those countries. And it's just too bad that a significant portion, probably close to half of Americans, have no idea how good they've had it because they've always had it good.
Yeah. And you don't know the details of sacrifices that were made. You don't know. I mean, which, by the way, I think makes many of us more grateful that we don't know. We don't know the horrors of war or anything else and what's required to defend liberty.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being, my father was stationed at Laughlin Air Force Base in Texas when all that was happening toward the end of his military career. And I remember being at the gate because Laughlin was, and I think still is, a large NATO training facility. And there were Iranian pilots on that base. And I was actually standing at the gate as a junior SP, junior security police officer. And I stood there and just watched these buses go out. And one of the airmen told me, yeah, those are the Iranian pilots. They're going home. We're sending them home. And I looked at that, you know, it stuck with me. I remember the day. I mean, I just remember, you know, what the air felt like and looking at the buses and the whole thing. But of course, as a young man, I didn't even begin to know the entire story. As a nation, we really didn't until the hostages came home, you know, until you looked at everything that happened during the Reagan years and what we learned about the Iranian hostage situation later. Mm-hmm. And it's horrific to think of.
It's still amazing that they got him out that way. When you think about it, you know, let's put together a fake movie and they actually, and then to hide it as long as they did and say the Canadians taking the blame for it.
Right. Right.
Not that they didn't help because the ambassador wife did.
Mm-hmm.
But they took the blame for, you know, basically arranging the whole thing.
Well, can you imagine? It would be so nerve wracking for me. I wouldn't be able to do anything. You know, I mean, coming up with a plan is one thing, but actually going in is another. I mean, you know,
like that CIA agent did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There is just no way for me. I mean, I would just, it would be so nerve wracking. There would be a couple of things. It would be a compounding effect on your nerves that, first of all, you're afraid you're going to get caught, but you're afraid that because you're nervous that you're afraid you're going to get caught, that's going to get you caught even faster. You know what I mean? And it just becomes this downward cycle. So thank goodness there are people that don't overthink it. Exactly.
That don't think about the danger that they're in at all.
Exactly.
I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to do it.
Because if you look at a CIA officer in the field or any of them, any of the special ops or any of these specially trained individuals, anybody wearing a uniform on foreign soil,
or not wearing a uniform on foreign soil,
it becomes something when they describe to you what they went through. It just boggles my mind. Well, it's a humbling thought and learning experience anytime you hear it.
And Canada took the blame because if the United States would have admitted we got them out in our own CIA with the movie and everything else, mm-hmm. they were afraid they were going to kill the remaining hostages.
Right. Yeah.
That were there. So if Canada took the blame,
yeah.
it was Canada's fault.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I thought about that just when I was thinking about the Oscars and when I was watching Argo and I went, nah, I like those Hollywood. I like the John Goodman, Alan Arkin. I like those type of Hollywood people.
Alan Arkin is so funny too.
He was great. Yeah, they were just great. Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
How much will the new China trade deal play into USDA's upcoming forecasts for supply, demand, and prices of various major farm commodities?
Certainly, our forecasts will consider that agreement in force. But
lots of buts. USDA's acting Outlook chairman Mark Jackanowski says it's hard to know how much the agreement should contribute. Number one, the publicly available purchase commitment numbers only give an overall dollar number, not any breakout by commodity.
We don't have access to that information if it does exist.
Number two, the overall dollar figure commitments in the deal likely cover varied ag products, not just the major ones for which USDA does supply demand forecasting. And number three,
our analyses are based on market conditions. And in fact, even within the agreement, it states pretty clearly that the purchases will be made based on market conditions and market needs.
And it's still not clear what those conditions or needs are and how they might be affected in China by the coronavirus situation. So Tuesday's USDA forecasts are going to be interesting. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, we will get into the latest polls here for New Hampshire. Biden not looking good at all. We were looking earlier at some of the polls, and we'll get to the specifics of it. The one that was really interesting to me was the Boston Globe poll that is taken every day, too, that shows the Buttigieg rise last week, peaking on Saturday, and then going back down to the numbers that he had last week. You know, whether that had anything to do with his interviews that he had on ABC on the Friday night, where he was questioned and accused of lying afterwards about the arrests of minorities for marijuana violations when he was governor, or, you know, excuse me, not while he was governor, while he has served as mayor of I got the mind blank.
Indianapolis?
No, he's not.
Indiana.
South Bend,
Indiana.
South Bend, yes. Thank you. Indianapolis.
Well, he could go to the 500 if he was mayor of Indianapolis.
He was accused of lying afterwards. Right, I mean, right, Democrats right, right. are out by saying, you lied about that. Yeah, you yeah. lied. And so.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. Let's put him in that same corner as Bloomberg. He seemed like, you mentioned this, I think it was Thursday or Friday morning. He just talks normal. He doesn't seem. Okay, go back to the very beginning of all this, and I said, if you look at their eyes, you look at their demeanor on stage, they all look angry. Michael J. Fox, why is Bernie yelling at me? All right, you look at and some of the candidates who have dropped out. I mean, they just had this, I don't know, the googly eyes, the angry eyes. Well, Mayor Pete didn't have that. Maybe they don't allow that in South Bend. But the whole idea is that he kind of settled in as one that was just, you know, it was his demeanor, really. Nothing else but his demeanor. The party really never invested much in him. Remember, at the beginning, he's not gay enough.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's the far left.
Right.
The party really didn't invest much in him. So they don't really care about him. Biden's going to gain some strength in the South. He's leading in the South. But if he doesn't win California on Super Tuesday, if Bernie starts regaining strength as they move out west, then it will be over for Biden. So it will be interesting to watch everything between now and March 3rd, and that's not very long. But March 3rd is Super Tuesday.
It's a mess. Right
it
now,
is. And
you're going to hear the. I think you're going to hear the Bernie Sanders people get very, very angry about Buttigieg getting more delegates.
Here's
in
your
Iowa.
Forecast.
A check of the precip over the next several days shows the wettest area of the country going to be Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia, with anywhere between 3 and 5 inches of rain. And that's just over the next couple days. You'll remember we had all that rain in the South last week. So this isn't helpful when it comes to potential flash flooding. The driest areas of the country will be the central and northern plains and portions of the Midwest. Oregon, Washington, California, and Nevada are part of the drier conditions. Now, if you're looking for winter temperatures to remain above average, the Climate Prediction Center says that will occur from Montana into the Northern Plains and Great Lakes states. Dallas today will see showers, 56. Chicago, partly sunny, 35. You could see a rain-snow mix in these overnight hours for Pittsburgh and Boston, but things will be warming up to around the mid-40s for later today for both those cities. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Ball nightly, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric. I'm Gary. 86690 Red Eye. Yeah, Michael J. Fox campaigning for former Mayor Pete Buttigieg on Saturday, telling voters in New Hampshire that he was tired of Democrat candidates yelling at him. I was watching the debate last night and it occurred to me, I love all the Democratic nominees and I have respect for all of them, but they're all yelling at me, he said. He singled out Senator Bernie Sanders as an example. I'm sitting there going, why are you yelling at me, Bernie? What did I do to you? He said as the crowd laughed. They're all screaming, but Pete isn't screaming. He's just talking to me. By the way, I got I think it was on social media, somebody put, I don't know how you could think that Buttigieg is normal. He's a radical leftist. We never said he was normal. We were talking about the optics.
Yeah.
The optics of how somebody presents themselves. That is what, talking as political consultants, when you see Bernie go off, when you see Elizabeth goes off, we were talking strictly the optics of how somebody presents themselves. And we were talking about when he talks, how he talks. We're not saying the substance is normal or conservative in any way.
Exactly.
We're simply saying the optics were. That's the point we were trying to make. There you go.
Well, but you know, it goes back to what I was saying about, another mayor, Bloomberg. The other mayor. Is his play that he'll let all the craziness just go on. By the way, you know, he's thanking his, I would say lucky, but billionaire stars that he was not part of the whole Iowa thing, Bloomberg. You know, he's thinking that because New Hampshire's kind of turning out crazy too, but he put all of his money in ads in the South and in mainly the Super Tuesday states. And it's his play to wait for all the craziness to die down and then start making more noise when you get to Super Tuesday. By the way, I don't think he's going to get anywhere close, but that's the only tactic I can think of. I think Buttigieg is probably in the same, along the same lines, except for the fact that you throw in now the interview and the whole thing about legalizing heroin and every other drug. And he can't answer the question.
And getting caught in the lie about when he was mayor, the what happened with the when it come to the arrest rate rates of minorities for marijuana.
Right.
And he was accused by ABC of lying about that.
Right.
Which was just wow. Now, Michael J. Fox also recalled, I have to read this.
Okay.
If I'm going to give you this story, I have to read the rest of the story to you.
Okay.
Michael J. Fox recalled the first time he met former President Barack Obama before he was a candidate. I was leaving. I was at the airport, and I noticed this guy standing by waiting for his car, and he was kind of hidden away, kind of around a corner, smoking a cigarette, if I can tell the truth, and it was the senator from Illinois. It was Barack Obama. He recalled that he immediately called his wife and told her that he had met the next president of the United States. Fox said he had a similar feeling after meeting Buttigieg for the first time, before he was even a candidate for president. I felt the very same way when I saw Pete. He described Buttigieg as a, quote, a very stable Rhodes scholar, end of quote, who was, quote, a little better than genius, end of quote. I liked Alex P. Keaton a lot better and his political observations than I do Michael J. Fox.
Was the show Family Ties, right?
Yes. And the picture of Reagan?
Yeah.
Remember the picture?
He played a young conservative. He was the teenage son in the family, and he played it, and he was the only conservative in the family. Always wore a tie. Yeah.
All right, I got to play this audio cut, our audio cut of the day.
All right.
And Chris Matthews. This is great because we'll go months without playing any Chris Matthews, and all of a sudden something gets, you know, something lights him up. He gets some kind of tingle or something, and
yes, or something.
He just goes off. Here he is, and now he's one of the Democrats that is concerned about socialism.
I have my own views of the word socialist, and I'll be glad to tell them, share them with you in private. And they go back to the early 1950s. I have an attitude about them. I remember the Cold War. I have an attitude towards Castro. Well, I believe if Castro and the Reds had won the Cold War, there would have been executions in Central Park, and I might have been one of the ones getting executed. And certain other people would be there cheering, okay? So I have a problem with people who took the other side. I don't know who Bernie supports over these years. I don't know what he means by social. 1 week it's Denmark. We're going to be like Denmark. Okay, that's harmless. That's basically a capitalist country with a lot of good social welfare programs. Denmark is harmless.
He's pretty clearly in the Denmark category, yeah.
Are you sure? How do you know? Did he tell you that?
Well, I mean, that's what he says, and that's what his agenda calls for, right?
Yeah.
He's not calling for anything.
Let's figure that one out.
But we haven't seen a campaign yet where video of him praising the other version,
right,
which is Castro, has been used.
Well, but that
will be used.
That's a question
we haven't
seen
how that plays.
Of how tender, what the effect that has.
Well, what does he think of Castro? That's a great question. What did you think of Fidel Ismo? We all thought he was great when he first, I thought he was cheering like mad for him went in. And then he became a communist and started shooting every one of his enemies.
Okay.
So what Chris Matthews is saying on MSNBC as one of the most well-known promoters of liberalism and socialism, which he has been,
yeah,
is that Bernie and socialism is dangerous because socialism can lead to shooting people and executing them in Central Park if socialism wins. This is from a liberal.
Starting to think the liberal media doesn't want Bernie to win. remember in 2016 when he gained momentum out west and he won, what states did he win? I don't know, one or two. I think he won the state of Los Angeles. No, he was really, what they called it, the Bernie surge. And the media kind of came alive then. Now, part of that was watching, I don't know, can you call Bernie an underdog? But watching an underdog, you know, surge. But a lot of it had to do with the ideas he was promoting. Remember, the support that Bernie got was from Occupy Wall Street. I mean, the leftovers.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he latched onto the free college thing.
Yep.
And it was a timing thing, just as I think with the president when he was a candidate on border security. There were things going on, high-profile news stories, and very serious issues that, frankly, have been there all along. But he owned it during that time because it was really, really prominent in the news. And so the president took it in 2016, and that was one. And not that I think that he's only using it for political gain. I know that he believes in border security. I believe that. But Bernie was just kind of, you know, on that whole free college thing off the coattails of Occupy Wall Street.
Billionaires are bad. Banks
yep.
are bad.
Yep.
If you're a college student, you're getting screwed over. You and I always brought up how we told college students, look, you can't make it in this world the way that it's set up. And we said, who tells that to young people?
Right.
But
in the end, it was not to be in 2016 because we knew the DNC. We learned later, once the emails were hacked and released, we learned that the DNC was ushering in Hillary, that there was never, they were never going to let Bernie become the nominee. And now, 2 weeks ago today in Politico, they don't want to tear him down if he's going to be the guy. They don't want to attack him. But they really don't want him to be the guy because they don't believe he can win, because he can't.
All right, a couple of the last polls just coming out overnight. One of them is a Boston Globe poll. The other one is Emerson. In the Boston Globe poll, Sanders has 27, Buttigieg 19, Warren 12, Biden 12, Klobuchar 14. So Klobuchar are actually in third place right now. Warren and Biden tied for fourth. In the Emerson poll, Sanders with 30, Buttigieg with 23, Klobuchar with 14, Warren with 11, Biden with 10 in fifth place in the Emerson poll. The most interesting thing that I saw was looking at the Boston Globe, which has been a daily poll here for a while now.
Okay.
And starting last Thursday with Buttigieg, when he started rising in the polls, remember that sudden rise last week?
Mm-hmm.
Where on Thursday of last week, and this is in the Boston Globe poll, Buttigieg had 19. By Friday, Buttigieg 23. By Saturday, Buttigieg with 25. By Sunday, Buttigieg with 22. And by this morning, Buttigieg with 19. Mm. Right back to where he was before. And was part of that was the rise and then the fall due to the debate and him being accused of lying about when he was mayor and the rates of minorities being arrested for marijuana, where he was accused of being a liar about it. And then the whole thing over the weekend, I know it was Sunday morning. I don't know how that would affect a Monday poll, but when he talked about legalizing, he was stumbling all over the place when Chris Wallace was pounding him on, you know, wanting to legalize meth and heroin because he's in favor of the decriminalization of all drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just stumbling. He didn't know where to go. And I was watching it and thinking to myself, in fact, I mouthed it out loud, you need to shut up. You need to move. You need to somehow exit this on a very short exit ramp and get to another topic because you're getting killed on this one.
And it stems from not the libertarian side of a Buttigieg, but this whole idea that we have too many prisons, nonviolent crimes. They shouldn't go to prison for a long time. Although if it's Wall Street and someone like Bernie Madoff, you know, of course they need to be in prison for a long time. And I believe the same applies for those who are convicted of these huge drug charges on hard drugs, especially. They keep telling you it's a victimless crime. These aren't violent criminals. Then you look deeper into individual cases and you find out that's just not the case. And here's the thing about it is I don't know if it's lack of experience, just bad advice altogether on this campaign. You could have said, look, we need prison reform, except can you? Because the only person right now that you can point to that's done real prison reform that people were calling for is
Trump.
Donald Trump.
And very quickly here, Vindman and Sondland being relieved by the White House. The Democrats made a big thing out of it. Yeah, you and I said, well, they would have been fired beforehand, except Trump didn't want a third charge of obstruction of justice by somehow firing them or whatever charge they would come up with. But you knew they were going to be gone.
Of course.
And why were they going to be gone? They don't believe in what the president's doing.
Right.
Well, that's not enough. Well,
yeah,
actually, it is.
It is.
It's like, that's the only reason you let them go. They don't agree with my policies.
You serve for the administration. And you serve to enact those policies and make sure that everybody on the ground knows those policies are to be enforced, period.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, our friends at PACCAR have a product for your toolbox called PACLink. It provides real-time information about what's going on with your truck. Michelle Moline is manager of product development for PACLink and has more details.
PACLink is basically a mobile diagnostic device that has a Bluetooth chip in it that allows you to use your phone to read why the check engine light is on in your truck. One of our biggest users is actually our own dealerships at PACCAR. Now, our dealers are also reselling this product to customers, and customers, owner-operators or fleet drivers, use this while they're on the road so that if they have a check engine light that comes on, they can easily just use their phone to plug this thing in and see what's going on and then either send a report back to their dispatcher to await further instructions or, in the case of an owner-operator, possibly even just figure out what needs to be done and go from there. It's a very simple ordering process. Go to PACCAR.com/PACLINK, P-A-C-L-I-N-K. I should mention, too, that if you're a member of OOIBA Association, you receive a 10% discount by logging into the OOIBA website.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, at the Oscars last night, An American Factory won the Oscar for Best Documentary. And Julia Reichert was one of the directors. Mm. And here's what she had to say.
And we believe that things will get better when workers of the world unite.
Thank you, Academy. Thank you to everyone who...
There you go. Straight out of the Communist Manifesto.
Workers of the world.
Workers of the world unite. If we're going to get into the discussion, as we have over the last week, yeah. Socialism, communism, because that being thrown at the Democrats. So you go to the Oscars, that is the bastion of liberalism.
Right.
And what do you get from one of the award winners? An exact quote from the Communist Manifesto.
Well, here's the problem, though, with the modern day communists. Nobody really wants to work. See? They just want the free stuff. They're not going to show up to work.
Loafers of the world unite.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.